Hey guys, it's Future Mike here. So we recorded this episode on Friday morning, which was before the news about Carl Weathers hit. And it felt weird to just release this episode without acknowledging it, but I wanted to record this like solo intro to basically say we here at A4E love Carl Weathers. Obviously, we're devastated. We will be doing an episode dedicated to him. The boys will be joined by the Great Valerie Complex to sort of give tribute to him in a few weeks. But I wanted to at least say this so that people didn't think, oh, wow, it's weird they didn't just even mention Carl Weathers. Obviously, he's a legend. We're very sad. I mean, I watched Creed, which is weird because he doesn't star in it, but that still felt like the most appropriate way to celebrate his legacy, since it's all about him. But anyway, yeah, I just wanted to throw this out there. We will be back next week, theoretically, assuming everything comes together with Brandon Beckett himself, Chad Michael Collins. I'm hoping to get him and Liam into a flex off. So make sure to listen to that. But then, yes, we will be in a few weeks doing a Carl Weathers tribute. So anyway, please enjoy the return of our Meathead King and some pretty in-depth Warpath talk. So enjoy. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to an early action for everyone for February 2nd, 2024. I am your host, Mike Scott. It is early morning for me, but there's a reason for that. That's because we have our returning compatriot. He is back, ladies and gentlemen, Liam O'Donnell. Liam, how are you today?
I'm doing well. It's actually my Friday night, 9 p.m., and I am set to leave Batam in the morning for Singapore and then make a long flight back to Los Angeles. So I think I would still just be arriving on our normal recording time on Sunday. So figured let's bang it out while I have no family or obligations and I'm just sitting here waiting for a flight.
And I was going to say, I think there was also something about you being told if the first thing you did when you got home was the podcast, you might as well stay in Indonesia.
That was I'm taking it as a light joke, but it may have been a real threat from my wife. Yeah, and the it was a reason why we're still waiting for Vice, but Mike started talking to me about drone cameras and progress in technology, and I said, we should just record because this is good stuff. And what you were saying is how far those things have come indefinitely. But I have all these problems with the drone operators because these guys show up, they get paid a full day, and they're like, you only need to work for 15 minutes, and they're never there when you want them. They're like, they get treated like rock stars. And I'm just like, remember when we had helicopters driven by professionals that, like, had limes in their hands, and the drone operator is just like drunk in his flip-flops. And I'm like, get over
I was gonna
here.
say, I always imagine they're all like 16-year-old kids, right? They're all like fucking.
One of them was a younger guy, and one was actually an older guy, and his name was Bambi. So I'd be like, Bambino, get over here. And he was a character, but very talented. But we definitely want to ring him sometimes when you're like, where's the drone op? And they're not there. But I also get the hurry up and wait thing where you're just sitting around waiting for your 15 minutes, and it can always end up being the 15 minutes you were in the bathroom or whatever. So
Right.
it's just all that sort of juggling of production. But yeah, it definitely blew me away what they can do. And you were talking about how the movement of them has just advanced so much in the last couple of years. What I was going to say to that is that the biggest surprise for me on this is actually the gimbal, which is sort of I think it first came out. They had them before Beyond Skyline. We use them, and they're these two companies. I think the first one was called Mobi, and the other one's called Ronin, which I've used on Beyond Skyline. Like the kind of, I mean, nothing I've done is famous, but the shots where they're spinning around the group at the temple, there's a wide angle shot that's a Ronin shot, and then there's a longer lens shot that's a Steadicam shot, and so that was what we did use a Ronin a lot in Beyond Skyline, but they were harder to control, and like you could do these awesome sort of spins and camera moves, but the way that my operator could his name is Trio, could do it on Warpath, it was like having this kind of like automatic Steadicam slash dolly in this guy's hand, and so it definitely opened up the way that I would film my masters in a way that I'd never quite done before. So yeah, the gimbal, it's just all those kind of small, interesting technologies that just allow you to, I think, kind of shoot the way that you dream a little bit more. So that's why the camera can be a little bit less hinged to traditional sort of setups, but I'm still kind of a traditionalist. So.
The thing I love about gimbals is they allow you to get the sort of immediacy of the up close shaky cam that you want while everything remains perfectly steady and in focus.
Yes.
And that really is the best. And again, what's fascinating about both the gimbal and the drones is adoption of them was concurrently driven not just by the film industry, but the rise of YouTubers, because YouTubers really were early adopters of drones. They were early adopters of gimbals, and especially at the consumer level, they're the ones that really drove consumer adoption of those things, which I find such a fascinating statement on sort of the 21st century and creativity and filmmaking that, you've got YouTube and movie making concurrently sort of using the same technologies, but for very, very different purposes.
Yeah, I mean, and it was I kind of came up, with like Steadicam's the shit, Steadicam's the thing, and the old-fashioned Steadicams were so expensive, and or sorry, it's expensive, but also so heavy, and you had to literally flip the whole rig around to do what they called low mode. So if you wanted to do low-angled shots, it took a considerable amount of calibrating and rebalancing to make put the camera kind of low looking up. And what we learned very early on in our camera tests, when we a few days before filming and trying out the lenses and bringing our cast in, is that we're like, oh, you know, all our casts, the sweet spot is like a low angle shot, you know, like a nice tilt up with like a little bit of a low tilt. And you actually can't even do that on a Steadicam the same way as a gimbal. So you could do it on a dolly, but of course then you're laying track. And if you're moving through you know, all these different sets on a small schedule, it's not quite as nimble as the gimbal. So yeah, that it just became such a sweet spot because of because in my DP John Riddell, like he actually I've had shoots where we do the camera tests and it's like kind of a just a glamorized wardrobe show and tell. But our camera test was like awesome. It like everything not only looked awesome, but we really learned the language of the movie that night, and then kind of used all that knowledge to make everybody look as good as possible. So yeah, that was definitely like I'd say the biggest difference just from a tool standpoint. But it's a little bit like you know on the Discord, Janine Pipe was asking advice things, and I was just saying how to use a football analogy, I'm a little bit more of a Belichick than like a Shanahan. I just kind of like see what the team is, and I see who's really, really good, and like that's who's I'm gonna ride to make the movie rather than just try to force my system in.
Right. You build a team with the talent you have rather than expecting your talent to adopt to what you want to do.
Especially when you're in foreign countries like Lithuania or Indonesia, and you know, it's like you're not bringing in your own team and stuff. It's like you can't go to some other place and be like, well, I'm David Fincher, so everyone's gonna do things my way. It's like, no. You have to be you know, the expert on the movie, which is what I would say. Like, just be the expert on the movie because no one else knows the movie. They know their job, you know, let them be the expert on their job and be the expert on how they can best do their job for that movie. So that's a little bit like of just my approach, my advice of just when you're working in low budgets with small amount of time is like just try to quickly find out who's really good and in your team and then lean into their talents as much as possible because that's going to be the movie. If I came here and as much as I wanted to do the gimbal, if the gimbal operator wasn't as good as he ended up being, then I would have found a different way in the different language of the movie. I wouldn't have just been like, I'm going to smash my head against the wall on this gimbal operator and not make my days and not get the movie done. So that's what I mean.
And that's actually a terrific football analogy. I'd never really, it feels like such an obvious analogy, but I'd never really thought of it as like, as the director, you really are the coach, right? You have the game plan in mind. You have the system that you want to employ, but it's up to you how you employ that system. Do you, like you said, do you adapt it to the talent that you have? Do you force your system on the team? You know, how do you adjust when injuries happen, when a gimbal operator sucks or is good? You know, how do you, like, that's actually a really fucking brilliant analogy. I get.
It is pretty good, and the reason why I always think about it is like sports podcasts are like the way for me to like disassociate and like calm down and not think about work. So when people would talk about what a football coach does, because so many of them don't call the offense, and everyone's like, "If you're not calling the offense, what are you the fucking coach for?" And I always kind of found that interesting because it'd be like someone being like, "If you're not the DP, why are you the fucking director?" And you're like, well, you know, there's layers above these things, and like you can be as involved in every department as you want to be. You know, there's no set rule on what the director like kind of can and can't do if he wants to be as involved as possible or as uninvolved as possible. And that's like I think similar to head coaches
Yeah,
and most people.
it totally works. Like you've got the director's the coach, your producers are your general manager, your DP is your offensive coordinator, your second unit's your defensive coordinator. Like yeah, it like totally works. Like wow. Meathead philosophy. Look at this. Liam O'Donnell coming in with the brilliance.
Yeah, your number one on the call sheet is your quarterback.
Yep, exactly. Well, I do want to say from the behind the scenes pictures that you've sent me, I think it's fair to say this is your best looking movie. I think it looks absolutely tremendous. And again, I haven't seen any moving footage, but just the still shots I've seen just look absolutely terrific. So I'm glad you decided, you said though you found the look of the film while you were doing this camera test and stuff. It's a good look. Like
Oh,
whatever the
thank
look
you.
is that you guys found, it's a good look. It because it is interesting because Beyond and Skylines do look really different, and you've talked about how that's because like part of that's because on Beyond your DP was very into handheld and Steadicam, and on Skylines he was a very traditional dolly guy, and I think that shows. I think both movies look really good. I've said this before, I personally kind of prefer the look of Skylines over Beyond. I know Beyond is probably actually still your favorite, but I gotta tell you, I think Warpath is gonna leave both of them in the dust in terms of visuals. It really looks amazing.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. It is just like it's a little bit like I said with that whole philosophy that it'll be a little different each time. But I think, like we talked about with the show, just forcing myself to articulate my own tastes and go into this. And then two of the things that frustrate me about Beyond. Well, one in Beyond is like early on, or is it very late in the schedule when we're filming in the subway? They wouldn't let us bring the lights into the area that we're filming, so we had to literally light the scene with like flashlights bouncing off of people's shirts, and it's just way too dark. So there's a couple scenes in that I think are way too dark and kind of that grainy digital dimness, and it's also. You're in a ship that's supposed to be scary, and how much do you show? So there's that horror element where, when he's walking through the ship, that you do want it to be dark. And then Skylines, there's that as well. You have these shadow aliens, but some of that stuff like didn't have as much color contrast and pop as I was hoping. So it's all about the darks that I was kind of when I go back, I get most frustrated by on those movies. And this one just has, by the nature of the story, less of a horror element. There's still some horror scenes, but I just was kind of very adamant to the to my DP, even when he did his show and tell and like did all of his stuff of what he wanted to do with the different sets and the different tones. So I was like, this all looks great. The one thing I'm going to tell you is like I don't want any dim scenes. Like even the horror scenes, I want there to be hard shafts of light. And contrast. I don't want that dim digital look because I feel like that's kind of all the way back to the first one, because the first one, Skyline, was early Red One, and it was so exciting that you could shoot in such low light. And I was just sort of like, I don't want to do that. I think it's going to be one of those things that's going to be the marker of that time period, and I'd rather just be old fashioned, bright. Like I don't need natural source lighting. That old quote from Lord of the Rings, where is that light coming from? The same place as the music, like I just wanted it to be kind of refreshingly artificial, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I love that. I was actually thinking about that like that's I think that's maybe part of the reason I like the look of Skylines more is Skylines has all those dim scenes, but you also bring in, shall we call it, the disco lighting, the gay dance club lighting. Like you've got like
The bisexual lighting,
the
yes.
bisexual lighting,
It was
yes,
much
and that.
more pinks and reds, and it was much more embracing my feminine side because of working with Lindsay.
And it looks great. That scene, and it's one of the behind the scenes or one of the press pictures for people who have seen it. You'll know though, when Lindsay's hooked up to the machine and there's all the pink light around her and stuff like that, like she looks amazing in that. And I think that for me is the biggest thing with Skylines is at that point you made you you know we as we know the theme of this show, hook your actors up. You hooked Lindsay up so
Yeah.
much. But what I can say is
Thank you.
from
I'm like, yeah.
the
Thank you.
behind the scenes shots of Warpath, And you talking about going with those lower angles and stuff. You have Eco looking like this might sound sacrilege, and it might also sound, I am obviously biased. You're one of my very best friends, but you have Eco looking like I don't think he's ever looked in a movie before.
I personally don't think it's sacrilegious. I think, and you know, I'm not going to overhype my own movie from that. It'd be if I make a movie even half as good as you know, his best movies, I'm happy. But it's the one thing I think I can do. It was and that I came to him as like I still think I can make you look more like a movie star than you ever have before. And so that was my own mission. And so even just him, like if you just follow him on Instagram, him walking around, you're like, this dude looks great.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing is, because in the Raid movies, you know, he's supposed to be sort of an everyman. You know, he's an extremely talented everyman.
Exactly. So that's why I don't think it's a knock on any of his other work, especially the ones by friends of the show. Yeah, like the Raid, he's the everyman. The Raid 2, he's got the badass haircut, but he's still kind of a kid. You know, he's kind of presented as a guy who's in over his head. He's not really. And then Headshot again, an amnesiac, and then you go to Night Comes for Us, and he's a villain. So he doesn't really, never really had any of those where they were trying to say like, this is a you know, the movie star badass sort of you know,
The
Tom.
Jason Statham look, if you will. That's what you're doing. You're Statham-ing him up in this movie. It's really working, I think.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And that's why I said that exactly what was the one where I'm like, I feel like I can at least control this. And so the local team was like really shocked at how obsessed I was about the wardrobe in particular, and like going to the mall with them, and like and just wouldn't be kind of easily satisfied, especially on Scott and Eco's stuff. Because I felt like they kind of nailed a lot of the other ones quicker, but I was just really, really specific. And then also an actress, Kelly Tandiano. I don't know if you guys have seen her stuff behind the scenes on Instagram at all, but she brought a lot to it. Wasn't unlike Rhona Mitra in Skylines, where she did her first fitting and she was like, this isn't it. I got an idea, and then started sending me these references that were really wild. And I was like, awesome, let's go for it. And so I think people will really get a kick out of her character.
I remember, didn't correct me if I'm misremembering this, but you had issues with the outfit that you were initially going to put Rhona in, and she's like, it's me. People want to see me in this outfit. And you're like, okay, let's do it.
And it wasn't. It was pretty similar situation with Kelly, and it's like, you'll from the outside, it's like, oh, this guy's got a fetish. Look at him putting these beautiful ladies in this kinky leather gear. But in both cases, I was like, I don't know, this is too much, and they're like, no, more. And so that's just again the good directing is good casting. So I just picked people that had, you know, I think the right attitude, and they knew the characters better than I did at that point, and
And
it kind
also, you know, like in Rhona's case, knows who she is, right? Like, this is the star of Doomsday. This was the woman who first brought Lara Croft to life. Like these are she knows Rhona knows who her fan base is. So kudos to her for like steering into that, right?
And I think even in 2019, I was like way a little bit even more scared about anything sort of problematic. You know, it was. At that time, it was like, oh, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to offend. And this movie, not that it's offensive or anything, but it was a little bit more like, yeah, we know where we are. And that one was, you know, made under this, are we PG-13 or are we R? Warpath was just, you know, kind of hard R the whole time. Although still, whenever I say that, I don't want people to then think it's Night Comes for Us hard R, because that's a different world. But
No,
yeah.
it's more like one more shot R, right? Like one more shot or R Warpath is R, and I would say
I would say it's the most R of anything I've done. It's definitely more R than Good Beyond Skyline, which is more R than Skyline. So I'd say it's the hardest thing I've done. But yeah, no,
Can
I
I
think.
actually ask you a really weird question that I've never thought to ask you before? Did any of that dilemma over is Skyline's going to be PG-13 or R come from the fact that Lindsay was a CW star and she had a CW fan base?
No. Oh, there. I've been trying to mute the cough, but now everyone heard it. One more second. Okay. No, it might have behind the scenes, but that was never presented to me. It was just sort of like it's a weird franchise because the first movie was PG-13, and then I put all my chips in the center of the table for the second one to be R. And then the third one was sort of a miracle that that thing even came together. So I think it was just sort of like they wanted to like rein me in a little bit and just say like it has to be PG-13. And then I said, okay, well, just give me my director's cut. And so because I was thinking it was going to end up getting cut to that, I think I made a fairly, palatable R-rated film that then no one wanted any cuts from. So yeah, I think it was just more like if we just say this guy can go R from the beginning, it'll be too much. But I don't know. I don't know. It just ended up never becoming an issue, but it was talked about beforehand in my contract.
So you did kind of the opposite of I think it's Eli Roth who puts like horrific shit in his movies because he knows they're going to get cut. So the more horrific shit he puts in it, when he cuts it back, it makes the ratings people think, oh yeah, he cut it way back. We're good to go.
Yeah, I mean, I obviously there was always the General Radford, Alexander Siddig's character getting ripped apart, and I shot that like two different ways where it was framed out when his body landed, and one where it was where you could see it more, and but there wasn't just a ton of collateral damage in it that I think I would have added more, and we kind of. Yeah, that's all I'll say. Yeah, there would be more of that.
I've just always wondered that with these CW, with these movies that star CW stars, because it's like, like for instance, I think of like My Bloody the remake of My Bloody Valentine that had Jensen Ackles in it. And that is an absolute hard R movie, no question about it. But Jensen Ackles is really nowhere involved in any of the stuff that would be considered hard R. He's like, and part of that's based on the plot because it's a twist who the killer is. I guess spoilers for My Bloody Valentine, what the fuck ever. And so I've just always wondered that when you've got these teen stars starring in these movies, something like also like Disturbing Behavior, which was ended up, I think, ultimately being PG-13, but if you watch the deleted scenes, it was shot definitely to be an R. But you got James Marsden and Katie Holmes, and so you've got, again,
Yeah,
it's,
I think about something like that, it would be, I think Lindsay had maybe one season to go or like a half a season to go on her show. But I think you're probably right that that was probably something that had creeped into the producers or financiers' calculus as to why they were insisting it. But it was never like specifically articulated that way.
Stepping way back for a second, one thing I do want to say, and this is just a point I want to bring up, going all the way back to the gimbals and stuff like that, I will
Yeah.
just say, for the people who are anti-digital filmmaking, who are like, film is the best. Look, again, we Liam, you love film, I love film, we love film. But some of this stuff that you're talking about, this technology, only exists because of digital. You cannot drone or gimbal a 70mm film roll in a way that you can a red camera that weighs a pound and a half. You know what I mean? Like,
We actually did the creator cameras, the Sony FX6s and the FX3s. So we use these tiny, tiny cameras. The first movie I haven't done that's not a Red. And I was pretty nervous, but the DP was like, Well, and I actually didn't even watch the creator, but I was like, well, the trailer looks good. And that and then we did tests with them, and yeah, overall very happy with them. But yeah, I mean, I think AVPR was the first movie I worked on, and that was three perf Kodak. And so I remember being on set and checking the gate and all that sort of film talk and reloading the mag and all that stuff. And then the first Skyline was digital. So I kind of been I got the tail end of that one perspective, and to me it's all just a means to an end. I think, like I said, I think the way you film something is always more important, and the way you kind of use your coverage and the way you use your blocking and all that is ultimately more important than the medium. But yeah, it'd be fun to do something on film. I don't know. I do have a lot of bad habits from digital. I loathe when people want rehearsals that I can't shoot, and I'll give you some of the reasons why. Like, I was complaining about the drone things. The drone operator wanted a rehearsal, and it was for a big end shot in the back lot with a ton of extras. And so we're like, okay, we'll do a rehearsal. So the cast stands down, and the extras do it, and of course the drone like flies into a rope that's hanging down on the set and crashes. And then I'm like, well, I'm so happy that we did that rehearsal. You know, I didn't get any of the footage. Like, if you had been recording it, I at least would have gotten the first half of the shot, and it would be in the movie because it looked amazing. But recording it and it's all a bunch of the stand-ins, it's not going to be in the movie. And then, like, again, doing rehearsals on without filming if it's the first thing of the day when you've done all the blocking all makes sense. But then it's like, okay, we're on like the fifth or sixth setup. Oh, can we do a rehearsal? And I'm like, yeah, we can do a rehearsal. We'll just shoot it though. Like, there's no, especially on these movies, there's no like studio looking at the dailies being like, look at this terrible daily. How dare they shoot this? So yeah, some of the old fashioned stuff I buck up against a little bit. But if an actor ever insists on like, oh, I just want to do a rehearsal, but I'll of course always do it. But the digital, cheapening of a take does kind of make you like, I just record it. You never know. There's all these interesting things, even things that you record. Like I said, I'll sometimes stop and say, let me get bring in the stills photographer of the shot because it's the perfect angle. And the stills photographer is always trying to steal the perfect angle from the side of the camera. So sometimes they'll say freeze. And we did that. And then we did a teaser for the wrap party. And one of the moments in that where one cast member walked up into a different place and posed a different way just worked so great for the teaser. And it's not like in the movie, but it's just like, oh, look at that moment. And so, those sort of accidents are always interesting, and yeah, you just want to be rolling all the time.
Well, and that's what digital provides, right? Again, this isn't like a, oh, digital rules, film sucks kind of argument. It's just a matter of people understanding each has their own benefits. Because when people are like, oh, well, the problem with digital is everybody just films everything and there's too much footage. It's like, no, you still gotta fucking make your day. Like you can't just shoot unlimited stuff when you're shooting digital, because you still have to
No.
make your day.
No, there I would say the amount of footage is fairly similar. I mean, you still don't want to waste the editor and the assistant editor's time, especially on a low budget movie. I don't have like three assistant editors or anything. So we'll still cut and stuff like that. But especially when we're doing action scenes, it totally makes sense to do a series, especially when it's like, a lot of DOI's teams like Action Beats, they'll have these wides, but then there's very specific inserts that are like very energetic, and so I would just be like, please do three in a row, guys. Please do not just do one and look at playback. Like we do a series. And so yeah, that's what it's good for, that you can keep rolling, keep rolling, do it again, keep rolling, keep rolling, do it again, and then cut and take a look at all three and see if we can move on or not,
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. What else do you have to tell us? I know you don't want to get too deep into stuff because you don't want to do spoilers, but I will say one thing that I thought. So this was an off mic conversation, but I don't think he'd be mad saying it. You were talking about your identity, your interests, what you want a movie to be. And you were, the whole concept of Warpath is basically you wanted to do an action film, but you're still Liam O'Donnell. So you still have to do your sci-fi Liam O'Donnell shit. And I was actually talking to Scott, and he's like, man, I'm not a big sci-fi guy. But it's a really good movie, and he's a really good director. But and I love that you are making this hardcore martial arts movie that has Liam Erna, that has Iko Uwais and Scott Adkins and fucking White Boy Bobby and Louis Mandalore, but it's still gonna have, skyline shit in it because I wouldn't expect anything less from you. And so, yeah, how did you decide to sort of like blend those things?
That's funny, because I would say to Scott, like, and it was sort of my experience on this one. Just, I started out in sci-fi. I started out in sci-fi horror, so it's kind of all I've ever known. And the farther you get out into these other movies and you do the different iterations, you do different genre mashes. So, our first day on this movie was actually sort of like a romantic drama. With Eco and Letitia, who was Alpha in the Big Four, and it's sort of a scene right at the beginning of the movie, and it was just so nice. It was such a pleasant experience to do something that was just so behavior based and experience based. And she's a really, really smart actress who asks a ton of questions and kind of kept me on my toes. And we did a bunch of rehearsals, because it's the first day, you have that luxury. And so what I kind of was realizing as I went into this movie, as I got in, is that I was like, wow. So then, we've done romance, we've done stuff that with crime, we've done like military macho action, all these different genres. But the days that I really dread were the sci-fi days, because it's not behavioral and experiential based. It's so uncanny and strange. That when you go into that, especially with someone like Scott, who's a very sort of down to earth guy, and he's like, I just need to explain what I'm talking about here, and I'm like, and it is like a sci-fi mumbo jumbo that does make sense, but it's just kind of funny that and he did really great in grounding those scenes, because it needed it. He kind of sets the whole movie out on the adventure, and it sets everything up. But yeah, it did make me kind of go where everyone, I feel like there's a common expression that comedy is the hardest thing, or horror is underratedly difficult. But like, no one ever says sci-fi is the hardest thing, but I kind of think it is. I think like it's really fucking hard.
Well, because it's so easy to just go into utter bullshit, right? Like, it's so, I think people think it's easy because it's like, well, it's sci-fi. We can say whatever we want. But the problem is, if you go into just complete gobbledygook, I had somebody, one of my friend's wives, well, that makes it sound like he has multiple wives. One of my friends, his wife, years ago when Lord of the Rings came out, and this pissed me off at the time, but I kind of get it now. She just literally could not buy in because of all the like Bad Dor, Minas Tirith mumbo jumbo that's in Lord of the Rings. And I was like, actually, yeah, like if you're creating a new world, you're gonna spew a lot of bullshit. like we think about it now with Skylines, like Power Claw is so inherent in what we think of when we think of a Skyline movie, that there's a Power Claw.
No one's ever said the word, though. I don't think
Yeah.
it's ever been uttered in the movie, but yes.
Yeah, but also, like, don't take this the wrong way. You know me, you know where I'm coming from. That's a dumb fucking thing to call something, right?
Yeah, right.
Like that's some
That's
Power
what I mean, though.
Rangers.
No one in the it's just what I called it behind the scenes. No one in the movie has ever been like, give me my power claw, but I call him the power claw. But and so I'm always a little like embarrassed about giving things too much like verbiage and nomenclature. So I sometimes I feel like I underdo it. And then you'll watch other things that just go so heavy on the lore that you're like, man, how's everyone going to keep up with this? But
And I
yeah.
think that's the thing that you actually do really well, is you give just enough lore and you give just enough of the quote unquote sci-fi bullshit
Yeah.
to build the world, but without crossing over into that, like, oh my God, I can't, like, I don't even know what people are talking about now
It's
kind of
very,
thing.
very difficult. And even I think, Skyline's got a bit too much into that because of the timeline just accelerating too far into the future. And so Warpath, because it's not so far down the line, it's actually a little bit easier. And it kind of has a lower burden as far as trying to explain stuff to the audience. But I did have this very funny script supervisor guy named Reynold, who was so anal and so literal about this stuff, and I'd always just be like, "You're talking to the wrong person." It does that because I want it to do that. But yeah, no, I think sci-fi is definitely underrated because when you're saying, "Well, this energy is going to turn someone into ash." And then the actor just has to like actually visualize that. Whereas in most other genres, they can visualize the dramatic circumstances of the scene.
Yeah, we all know what getting shot or stabbed is like, even though we've never been shot or stabbed. We don't know what getting vaporized. I mean, we know better now than we used to, thanks to Blade and Buffy the Vampire Slayer,
Sure, but
but.
still, it's just not the same. And that's what I mean is that when I mean it's hard is that directing the actors into it is hard, but with this cast it wasn't. But I kind of would let everybody I think feel comfortable with how silly it is, especially I think these things usually feel silly in the master because a lot of sci-fi and horror and these things have to kind of be directed by camera. And so when you're filming the master and everyone's just like doing this in a wide, it has this sort of just bad echo feeling when you first do the take. And so I try to let everybody know, okay, we're going to do a really horrible master. And then when it's okay, they feel better. And then when it gets into the actual design shot that is going to work for the moment, everyone sees it and goes, oh, okay. And then they feel better and they don't go home feeling like they're going to look stupid or anything like that. So it is sort of like I've gotten better, I think, at walking people through the process so they understand what they're about to do.
Well, and that's the thing, right? Like you also still have in all your movies guys in rubber suits, which is I can only imagine has got to be impossible on set because there's just no way you can make those look cool like on set, right? Like they all I'm pro rubber suit,
We
but
added a couple tricks this time, but yeah, I mean, even and that was another thing I felt like I was like, well, the suits will be easy because I've done this before, and then you forget all the different problems that they present, especially in the heat, and so we ended up having to do a lot of scenes without their helmets on, without their masks on, because the actors like just couldn't they couldn't function as human beings with the helmets on and suits in the heat, but also when they're doing fighting and trying to act where they're being hit, even though you can kind of hit them in the suit because it's a spongy block, it's like they need to see or else it just doesn't look like they're actually being affected by anything. And so Yeah, it was still like relearning things, and in some ways I kind of was like I kind of it's strange because Beyond Skyline is obviously, like you said, it's a very important movie to me, and I'm very proud of it. But I think over the years I just see all the mistakes and that movie was had a lot of expectations going in, and I think I had a lot of expectations on myself, and people wanted it to go theatrical, and a lot of the people involved did not like the movie. I'd say both producers and actors, people were not happy with it, and so there was a feeling of failure for a while that kind of spun around by the reception. And so kind of going back to the world in some ways, and then doing some of the fights, and then looking back at what I did, I was kind of like, I did a pretty damn good job for what I did back then. And I kind of actually ended up reshooting some of the suit fights, like I did in Beyond Skyline, because I was like, no, this is kind of better than what we're trying to do here. We're trying to do a couple more stylized ideas. And I was like, you know what works? Like a nice big wide Steadicam around a monster, and then a good medium on the actor's face, and then a nice old close up where it stabs him in a cool way. I was like, that works every time. So yeah, I kind of had a full circle moment.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I mean, that's literally like, yes, like that's, I don't know what else to say. Yes, that works. Like sometimes you just, if you get the chance to watch Ico stab a monster in the head, like I'm there day one. Like literally you could show me nothing about a movie. This is I'm gonna reach the way back because I don't think they do this anymore. But back in the day, kids, if you were in a mall, you'd occasionally run into people who would be like, "Hey, we're screening this movie. Do you want to come and see a free movie and tell us what you think?" And they would give you just a little bit about it. If you said, "Hey, do you want to come see Eco UI stab a monster in the head?" I would have been like, yes, let me call in sick to work so that I can come see this movie in which Eco UI stabs a monster in the head. Like that's so yeah, I mean sometimes the oldies are the goodies.
Yeah, it was again, it was, I guess it was one of those things where you have those experiences in life, and you have that like what's the word, imposter syndrome and all that, and then to go forward so many years in the future and to have to come back with these guys and get a second chance of it, and then to look at a few different things and go, you know what, that was pretty good when I just kind of made that up the first time. Let's do some of that. That was kind of a fun moment for me. I don't know. It was sort of like a high five to a past self, because in a lot of other circumstances in the movie, I feel like I'm improving and going back and fixing the things that I didn't know how to do when I was younger. So it was a little bit of like, I guess I didn't do such a bad job. That was pretty good, and little things here and there. And I think that's sort of the that's sort of what was quite, special about the process of just being like, even in front of and behind the camera in a lot of different ways of kind of just being more of the professional and the adult that I would like to be, and that I would want to work with myself and stuff like that, and to create an environment on set that everybody felt, obviously very supported and positive and nurturing. And so yeah, that was, I think, the most satisfying part. And it was just hearing from different cast members and stuff saying that like they never had a set project that was this positive and that felt that way before. And I was like, well, it was there. Like that's the thing. That's why I love Indonesian crews, because they were always so positive, but it was about me protecting that positivity and only bringing in the right people that would, that would respect and that would work well and thrive in that environment, and getting rid of people that didn't. So yeah, that was, I guess, like, and it was something that was very important to Eco and I. So that was like, I don't know, like a real blessing, a real feeling like you get to go back. And there's other things that I'll talk about later to the release, of things that I changed from Beyond Skyline. And I've kind of touched them on it before, but it's a little bit inspired by, you know, my favorite directors, George Miller, Michael Bay. They don't really give that too much of a shit about continuity. They kind of just like, you know, yeah, it's the same character, but it, you know, this stuff's going to be different because it's cool and that's it. So there's a little bit of that too.
Well, so I'm going to make a very weird comparison between the two of us, because obviously we are very different, but I suffer from imposter syndrome greatly. Like, actually, it's not even imposter syndrome. I am borderline incompetent in a very large part of my job, because I suck at paperwork. I suck at deadlines. I suck at details. And for those who, this is probably not going to be surprising to people, but being a lawyer is very much about paperwork, deadlines, and details. And I am borderline incompetent at that. I walk into a courtroom and I'm looking at a jury, I can confidently say I am one of the best there is. And I feel like that's the same thing. Hear me out on this, because this is going to sound a bit like an insult, but it's not. It's going to be a very big compliment. I feel like there's a bit of that with you, where it's like, you're Liam, you're the meathead, you're the guy that's always posting flex pics and stuff. And it's like, we sometimes forget that you're actually really fucking good at this. And that was, you know, the biggest thing when I talked to Scott that he said, and he said this to you too, so I don't feel bad saying this, is like, mate, he's a really good director. Like, he is so good at talking to the actors and like letting them know what he wants and how to do it, and just making them feel comfortable. Like, you are so good at what you do. And even I forget that, because, you know, my job on this podcast is to bust your balls. Like, and so even I forget that sometimes, but like, you're really fucking good at this, dude. You really.
Oh, yeah, no, man. I mean, thank you so much. And you know, it definitely meant a lot it always means a lot to hear that, but it means a lot to hear it from Scott and what he said. And, you know, but I also give him a lot of credit, because he gave me permission, because he did say, like, you know, these are what I tend to do when I feel like I don't like my own performance. So if you notice this, tell me. And I think that's such a great thing for an actor to do, because I don't think a lot of them do, you know what I mean? So it especially when you got someone who's older and bigger in stature than you, like Scott is to me, where he's a legend and I'm directing him for the first time. So for him to kind of say, oh, here are the things I, you know, would like you to watch, and let me know if I'm not, if I'm not doing what, you know, if this steps out, and kind of giving that permission, I think that's really important. I think that, that more actors should think about doing that, especially when they're working with less experienced directors, because it does give permission in a way that was like, made it so easy, because you know, it's very specific certain moments where it was like, okay, that, you know, you remember when you talked about me about the toughness versus vulnerability? Well, what about if we try this here? And boom, it was just like, you know, it made it really easy. So I think it all kind of just goes back to doing your homework and working with the right people, and the people that are going to actually go up and say that is a real gift. And I mean, I don't think I've talked about Louis Mandalore, but I mean, just like Crazy, crazy. Like he comes in and he's just like, hey, baby, you look beautiful. Like, what are we doing here today? Oh, I'm excited. And then, he's got all these different ideas and these crazy little sayings, and they'll throw it all in. And then as soon as I kind of feel like I'm happy, I'd always just say, last takes for you, Louis. And he's like, really? And then he'll just throw in another like kind of completely different insane line here and there, or turn and insult a member of his crew in a very fun way. So yeah, it is really all about the collaborators.
I do just need to say, for because I don't think anybody's heard this on the show before, so I'm going to say this. Why is Louis Mandalore in the movie?
Oh, you made me laugh and cough at the same time. Yeah, that is Michael Scott. Michael Scott is why he's in the movie. So I was like, this role, I when want to have an Australian actor, and you immediately said Louis Mandalore, and I was like, he's Australian? Like I just picture him from the Debt Collectors, and then kind of thought he would be, that the role was kind of, not necessarily his type. It's not like, not that it's too small, because he's in the movie, a decent amount, but it's like kind of a just maybe too much of a dirt bag. But he loves playing dirt bags, so he really took to it, and made him all the more fun to play, and delicious to play. So yeah, that was great. And it just so happened that he had a relationship with the producer and everything. So it came in real quick. But yeah, I would have thought, one, I just never would have thought that it would have been possible. And that's why the whole time I was kind of like pinching myself that we got him to come in. And then of course I just kept adding him into more stuff, and having a little bit more fun with the character, because what a gift.
Yeah, he's amazing. And yeah, I just pat myself on the back. I get so few victory laps in life. I have to take the ones that I can. Hey, Vice, Sanka, you dead man?
Yeah, man. Oh, sorry for the delay. The week's gotten the better of me. Even though it's Friday, it's still a work weekend. You guys caught me in my work hours, not my cool, chill dad guy bro hours. Sorry about that. But I'm just happy to see Liam again.
Yeah, no, you're good, buddy. Like, that's the go ahead.
I was just saying, I'm glad I told Mike we should just start recording. We've got good stuff to talk about. My advice will jump in, and that was an hour ago.
Oh boy, this is like the worst possible example of CP time. Oh, for other people don't know, white people in listening, that's
Yeah, maybe I
currently.
laughed too hard at that.
No, I know you would love that one. But I guess it's kind of, well, I have bouts of insomnia every now and then, so my sleep schedule is always off. But I feel kind of embarrassed, not just because I'm late, but also because like I'm just doing my regular like 9 to 5, well, in my case, noon to eight job, and here you are just finishing a whole goddamn movie, and you look so refreshed and chipper, and I feel like dog shit.
Yeah, I'm muting like every 5 minutes because I have a demon in my chest, bad cough. So, yeah, it's like what 10 p.m. here. I'm still having a couple beers, but no, man, I'm glad that we got you on. It's funny hearing you from afar, the past couple of weeks, and not being able to get to listen in. And it, I do feel like, when I listen to you and I'm with my own thoughts and I don't talk back, it's like I really understand more of the Vice Galaxy brain than when you're getting it live on the pod. Do you notice that too, Mike?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, luckily, this is the thing, is the reason I get the Vice Galaxy brain is because I was such a fan for years before we started this podcast. And so like I even if I don't agree with him, I'm like, oh, this is going to be Vice's take on this. But yes, you absolutely need to like be at a distance from the Vice Galaxy Brain.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like just when I'm walking around and I hear, I'm like, oh my God, wow, this is crazy. But sometimes when it's on the pod, you're just so immediately talking to the person that it doesn't expand as much in my head. So that's been fun to hear from afar. And then two, I feel like, maybe in weird ways, like you guys are, like our emotional vulnerabilities are all very different. And like, I'll be the one who like weeps over like tragedies. But then if you guys tell me something bad's happening, I'm like, sorry to hear that. So I think when you were sharing about all the health scares and stuff, I'd just be like, I don't want to hear anything bad happening to my friends. But then when I hear it on the pod, I'm just like, this is unacceptable. From far, like it's not acceptable. I don't you're gonna keep fighting, and I see you saying I'm gonna survive for Den of Thieves 2 Pantera. You're surviving, period. It's unacceptable. The fatalism. I'm like I can't. I don't want to contemplate this world. So that's me emotionally saying, that I'm here for you, and that I just want you to keep fighting for your health and for your life, because when you hear it and you're so far removed, it's like no world without Vice. It's not happening.
I'm not sure what to say other than I appreciate you digesting what I'm putting down. But also I shared this in the Discord. So just last night, I don't know. We're kind of on a tangent here. I didn't have anything planned to tell you. Even when I was gonna arrive on time, I didn't have any questions. I just wanted to see you. So now I'm just choking off the cuff. But I bought this product. It's called a bull bar. It's this fancy contraption. It's apparently the world's first collapsible mobile pull up bar. It like folds up like a kind of like a projector, I guess. And so you like raise it up, snap it in place, and it holds 300 pounds. And you do pull-ups, chin-ups, it's the whole gamut. Whatever you can do with a power rack, well, other than, power lift, you can do it. And I got it not just to be like some dork with to waste money on a home gym he doesn't use. It's it's part of this ongoing, I was going to say struggle, but well, I guess it is, honestly, because my workout and exercise now just to, I'm working out to live, not just to be pumped up. Like I reached that point in my life now, like I have to get my steps in, or I have to get my heart rate at a certain point, or else I will be not here anymore. Which is a sobering thought. But yet, I actually feel a lot better. Just, all the combination of getting out of the army and kind of degrading, but also just being old. I'm going to be 41 next month. So it's like, God, it's February, Jesus, yeah. So it's like, this is like a whole different body almost. So all I have to say is that, I'm trying new things, because I'm in a new headspace. So I appreciate all you guys' support. Like, I mean, you specifically, Leo and Mike, because we're y'all old too, so y'all get it. And like when you're gone, here recording, I had this kind of pressure to to fill in the positive masculine energy more, but I suck at that. I'm a ball of anxiety and cholesterol. Like that's my actual day to day existence. So when I'm on the show, like, you know, I'm an amped up version of that, but like, no, now I, then it was like, no, I had to be more than that to, like, you know. So yeah, just yeah, it was difficult to fill your shoes.
No, I thought you did great with the meats and all dicks are welcome. Although I would have made fun of you that pink dicks are not welcome and that you have other nuts.
There's a it's like the No Homers Club. You're allowed one. Well, I guess two in your cases. So.
I really want to make a like self-deprecating joke about having a micro penis, but I know it's not. It's whatever.
Last week I said this is not penis talk. Maybe it is now. That's our show now.
Old penis talk is important. This is a problem with. We're going way off the rails here, but you know, this is a problem with men. We do not talk about penises because, like, your penis can kill you in a variety of ways, and it's very important. And there are a variety of things that will make it not work. So, like,
oh my God. Yeah. So, let me tell you guys, I was going to tell you this, but like, I might as well, because this is part, is important. So, it's actually the ongoing saga of Vice's meat. Like years ago, a couple years ago, when I was in college.
Really quick, I wish you guys could see Liam. Liam is fucking dying right now.
I have a cough, so I'm just muting as I like have conniption fits of the ongoing saga of Vice's meat.
I don't want to lose my train of thought. It's important, but so stay with me. So like there was a time I was going to school and going to work and doing stuff at the, like this a couple years ago. Still in you know, college, and things were so stressful that I was having like I don't know, psychosomatic, psychological, physical effects. My dick started hurting for no reason. Like my dick hurt bad for like an ongoing period of time, and I was scared to back. I'm like, oh my God, I have dick cancer. So I went to the doctor and like I did all the tests, I did the blood draw, the full panel. Went to the gastroenterologist. Yeah, they didn't find anything. It was just the stress of life was so bad that like it was like causing me physical pain, and for some reason, like, God thought it would be funny to have that pain located in my dick, and so like I couldn't even tell nobody this other than my wife, because how do you explain this? How do you like go to your boy? You know, you having dinner. You know, at Five Guys, and like, hey man, what's going on? Yo, my dick hurt. Like, where do you go from there? The friendship is over. But like, it you have to like, but it was important that, as an older man, that instance could be so much actual serious stuff. Like, you know, one could actually have dick cancer, but you wouldn't know if you didn't go to the doctor. Like, it's a like, you know, like we've lost people to like, you know. Colon cancer and prostate cancer, all those are like, we're at the age now. I'm at the age now where it supports checking this stuff. So yeah, like at the time, I didn't have anybody really to tell me about it, but that's why I'm like, you know what? We should have people talk about that. If your dick hurt, you should be able to tell your best friend, even your drinking buddy, the guy at the bar. You should be like, hey bro, your dick hurting, and he should be like, yeah man, I gotta see what's up. We should have the care and confidence in each other. Talk about our man pains. No, that's not right. Because it's not just man pain. It's penis having pain. Or, not if you don't have a penis, like, or if you, whether or not you have a penis or have one in transition. Yes, that's the way. These are important things. So yeah, like, and that's part of why I appreciate you guys as my friends now. Because we do cool shit. Like, here you are making an action movie with the one of the greatest action heroes of all time, and here I am at home, my dick hurting again. But like, I know that in your heart is like, those two things are like have significant importance to each other. I like to think. Well, like, I care about your movies and your career, and also your dick health too. Because I know, again, we're like,
I can't fucking breathe anymore. I'm dying. I cannot fucking believe this rant. What did you just say?
I care about the your livelihood, about I care as much about
you care about my dick health.
Yeah.
I want it to be clear, Vice. We are not laughing at you. We are laughing because we agree with you, but you have such an articulate way of putting this that it because yes, we all three of us care about our dick health. There's no question about that. But yeah, we're not people listening, they might think that we're like making fun of you. No, we're not. We're taking you very seriously.
He knows what we're laughing at.
He's just so goddamn fucking funny that yeah.
The worst part, maybe the best part, is whenever I try to be serious, people are like, it sounds like a joke. When I'm joking, my jokes are actually terrible. But yeah, point being, yes, like it's been a weird time with your absence, and I was like, am I getting dick anxiety again?
Oh my god!
No, you're back. That's not the same thing as Peter Genevieve. It's different. It's not the same thing. It's like
my penis is much more comfortable now that Liam's back on the show.
But speaking of which, when you got the tests in the doctor where they're like, good news, bad news situation, like where they're like, good news is, you know,
I mean,
with your dick, bad news. I don't know. It's just so funny that they're like, nothing's wrong with your dick. And you just have to stare at them. You're like, why does it hurt?
You know how frustrating? Yeah, that's the most vexing feeling. That's like, because, oh, man, I don't even know. Like,
no, I've had similar things with like a pain. I feel like it's an electrical pain in the ball of my foot, but it's not my dick. So I just, but you're still like, you kind of want them to say something's wrong because then it'll explain the pain.
Yeah.
And then when they say nothing's wrong, you're like, well, I guess that's better than saying we need to operate or something like that. So,
yeah. Phantom dick pain. Oh my god, this is that should be the title of your next movie, Liam.
It's hilarious to me that last week we were all about this is not all about dicks, and now this conversation is like, no, sorry, this is 100% about dicks. Now it's not gender related because lots of people can have dicks, but this is a 100% a conversation about dicks. But again, I can't believe I'm about to share this, but I agree with you, Vice, because anybody that is on antidepressants knows that shit fucks with your dick.
Yeah, I'm speaking
from personal experience. So anybody out there who is on antidepressants, who has especially SSRIs, that is a thing that we don't talk about. And it's unfortunately, it is a thing that a lot of dudes will, because I will make that trade 100% of the time. Not on antidepressants, I was suicidal, which is way worse than having a dick that's wonky. But this is a thing that dudes will not talk about. And it prevents dudes from getting on SSRIs because, oh, well, I don't want my... But you also want to walk in front of a bus. Like, imagine waking up in the morning not pissed off that you lived through the night. Because before I got on SSRIs, every goddamn morning, I was so mad I didn't die in my sleep. Yeah. Now I like wake up and I'm like, oh, hey, it's a new morning. You know, like it's, but this is the shit, like you were saying, this is what you were trying to say on the Discord in our like mental health channel and stuff. This is the shit we don't talk about. Dudes do not talk about. We will not talk about.
Yeah. And I don't want to like take the podcast time to like air our grievances and be sad about it, because like I want listeners to have fun and enjoy our conversations about movies, but like I can't, like we're like a community or whatever, we try to be, try to force that, so like I'm not trying to like in my case I'm a co-host on this show. But this is not my podcast, so I don't want to come off as like it's just me talking about my life when recording. That's not what I'm trying to do, but I do want to, like, you know, or yeah, everybody listening, like we're here for the cool movies and stuff, but like at the same time, I know a lot of us have some real shit going on, so like on the one hand, we helped, like, you know, provide relief for that in the form of entertainment, but also want to provide relief for that. When people know that we're going through shit too, just with y'all, and we want to be here for y'all, for each other, like that. Like, so that's why, like, you know, I follow Leo on Instagram, so, like, you know, because he posts all his movie stuff. So I'm here with my wife, showing her all the every day during your shooting, when you had the clips of the crew and stuff. Like, I'm showing her that stuff, but, like, I'm also showing her, like, your family pictures, even, like, whenever you and your daughter when at home, they posted them for you or with you. And I'm like, look at this little kid, like, because she's amazed that Trent is, like, so huge for a little baby. Like, so, yeah, I guess what I'm trying to say is it's difficult or nearly impossible to avoid this being a personal outlet, because we're, even though we haven't met in real life still yet, we're so attuned to each other's lives that, like, and, you know, your work is kind of your life, you know, like, I guess you showed the pictures in this case, like, you have your family in your movie now, like, that's, you know, so, like, I guess it seems to me inseparable. So I kind of feel unkind, like,
yeah, it is. It is.
Yeah.
Well, no, people should never lose sight of the fact that this entire podcast exists as an excuse. Like, it started as an excuse for the three of us to just shoot the shit together. Like, yeah, like, that's always going to be the overarching purpose of this podcast, is the three of us to just hang out. We love that hundreds of you every week come along with that journey. But at the end of the day, this is just about the three of us. We could have two of you listening, and it would still be the three of us shooting the shit.
Yeah, this is, I think that's what people always liked, the just these kind of reset episodes where we just connected and talked about whatever we were going through. But yeah, so it's par for the course, I think. We did. Movie, you know, tried to stay not into the story of the movie, just talk the craft, and then we got,
and then dick talk,
Tyson's meat odyssey, and wow, I definitely feel like we got into the therapy session. So yeah, man, I'm happy you woke up.
Oh yeah, man. Shit, yeah. Just talk about being happy to wake up, but yeah. Oh boy. Because also, like, I'm also exhausted because of work, but, like, that fucking pull up bar. You know how hard it is for a fat dude to pull ups? Like,
yes, I do. Liam does not, but I do. I know how hard it is.
I lost about, like, plus something 10 pounds on this at least. So, like, I get bigger and smaller. I mean, you can see photos from me from day one, day thing. Like, I definitely, I mean, the older you get, the bigger you get too. So it's like, I definitely know how it feels to feel thick compared to lean.
This is why it always annoys me when I see people that are like 150 pounds doing fucking 25 pull-ups. I'm like, I'm packing an extra 70 pounds over you. Like, yeah. Like, put a 70 pound backpack on and see how many fucking pull-ups you can do.
Well, that's what, like, you know, when I'm looking through yours, you know what I mean? Like, Andrew talked about it. You posted a picture of the, like, in the gym, you know, with the fight sign. Like, I wish you had, or maybe you do, you have video of you, like, just, like, pumping weights with Mandalore and Ego, like,
there were two different gym sets in the movie. And the one gym set is Eco's in, and the other one is Zach Lee's gym. And so they're two different scenes, but one of my goals was that they would have to, like, have weights at the stage longer, but they each rented them and got them in and out in, like, a very short period of time. But the day that that Eco and I were in the gym, yeah, we were, he just built those delts up and he's just doing that. in between takes. And he wasn't supposed to be lifting in the scene, but I just made the camera go over there, and I'm like, ah, I'm just filming lifting. I don't even know why. he just did a take where he's sitting there doing shoulder presses. So yeah, it was fun.
One thing I do want to say again, off mic conversation with Scott a little bit, or maybe it was on mic, I can't remember, but either way, it's not like top secret stuff. I did ask him, I'm like, so exactly how long was it before Liam got you sleeveless? And he was like, oh, it's like day one. And I'm like, yep, we have a brand around here. And I'm happy to see he's maintaining it.
He showed up sleeveless, first of all. Like he's that guy who walks around in a tank top all the time anyway. But yeah, it was like, it was definitely had it, it there. There's even, I got to save it cause it's funny, but the story of the sleeves and the clothes in the movie, we can talk about it after you guys see it, which by the way, you know, I did, do a, you know, typical for these movies. I put together a teaser trailer to show at the wrap party. And it's always quite satisfying for the crew. I always try to make it a surprise. And so I figured I could show it to you guys on like the share screen, but, not for the pod.
Well, I know if we keep talking, we're going to get more and more into Warpath, and we need to leave some surprises.
A lot of meat on the bone. And even last week when you're like, I don't know if it was last week or the episode where you're like, you guys aren't prepared for this. It's going to blow you away. I'm like, this movie's going to disappoint everybody. I can't fucking live up to these expectations. Stop hyping me up. We've got a year to go. But yes, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. I know people wanted us to talk about the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare trailer. We'll do that down the road. I'll just say really quickly, looks good.
Looks good.
Looks like good guy Richie. Argyle does not look good. I am not going to go see it this weekend. I know the twist, it's fine. I don't know why they hit it so much. So anyway, no movie talk this week. There's nothing. If people are wondering, yeah,
Liam. One of the, which, Aaron, our guy, Aaron posted on the Discord, and a friend of the show, a friend of mine, John Aiden's short Wish Me Luck with Bob Odenkirk and Daniel Bernhardt, available on Collider, shot this in 2019. And I can't even imagine how frustrating it must have been for him as a young filmmaker, having gold on your hard drive.
I totally missed that was a short. I thought that was a trailer for an upcoming, but that's an actual short.
It's a 10-minute long short, and
it
feels like it's a minute long because it's so well paced. And the fighting's so great, and it's funny and breezy. I honestly, it's kind of like they kind of do the Soderbergh's like Haywire like style in some ways, but I like it better. I always felt like the jazz score in Haywire was like someone who's like ashamed of action movies, but this like, the jazz goes with the vibe, and the choreo goes with the music, and everything, and it all is fused together. I think. You know, I've always thought John was just a, you know, really talented director who's gonna, you know, have his day for sure. And I just, when I first was meeting them with Skylines, that was they were filming the beginning of this, and it was like we just kind of walked in, said hi, met Daniel, and then Odenkirk walks by. I'm like, hey, and they're doing the part. If you watch the short where Odenkirk's being led out of the garage and a hostage is being led in, and they were doing the walk several times over, and I was like, I think they've got it. And then I watched it, and they do this cool split screen with all this coverage, and I'm like, oh, that makes sense why they filmed it so many times. So yeah, it's excellent, and just, you know, can't recommend that enough. And hopefully we can get John on the show finally to talk about that and his career sometime soon.
I do also want to shout out, you mentioned it earlier, Liam, but friend of the show, Janine Pipe, future guest Janine Pipe, is trying to raise money for a short that she is hoping to transition into a feature film. For those who don't know, Janine has made a couple of horror shorts. She works with Neil Marshall quite a bit. She wrote the definitive behind the scenes book on Dog Soldiers and The Descent. She's great. We love her to death. So please, please follow her on Twitter at JaninePipe28. And that will link you to her Ko-fi or coffee. I never know how to pronounce it, but, and you can support her there. You can support for as little as like $3. You can support all the way up to $1,000 if you want. I'm still trying to decide. There's part of me, I'll tell you one thing in a sec, but please support her. Janine has a really cooking idea based on her experiences, so please support her. There's part of me that's like, you can get like a credit on it if you support. I do want to announce I also have my first IMDb credit, because our good boy Spencer Schwendeman has a short film that I was in, and I told him the only thing I want is I want an IMDb credit. So he gave me an IMDb credit for it. So I have my, it's not fully out yet, but it is awesome. I love it. It was very weird hearing me in it, but it's terrific.
Did you do voice work?
Yeah. The plot is the main character is out doing this mission, and I'm base basically. So I recorded it with Spencer over Zoom, and then they ran it through a bunch of audio processors and stuff like that. So it sounds like I'm remote, but basically I have to be a ginormous asshole, which came to me very, very naturally. So, yeah.
Yeah. You do have a very great dispatch voice. I could see it. That makes sense.
Yeah. No, it was very much, I mean, you know, you need me to say a line like, what the fuck are you doing? And then cut me off. Like I can deliver those sorts of, yeah. So,
ooh, wow, I felt the chill there.
Yeah. So Spencer, love you, buddy. But anyway, yes. So that's what's new in my world. Vice, where can people find you?
Fucking bed, bro. you can find me on Instagram, being hot. You know, yeah, I'm gonna post it on my me and my home gym setup now. So let's be there. Not quite as cool as a movie set with space creatures, but I'll manage. So I'm on Instagram at Vice Victus. On Letterboxd there too. What's coming? You know what? I think I will go see Argo just to get into the mix, because people are being weird about this movie. Like, well, film Twitter is always weird assholes anyway. So when there's movies like this and Beekeeper, they get especially particularly asshole-ish. So I gotta join in. I gotta go join in on this shit. So I'm going to see our girl there. So once I see it, I'll give my review on Letterboxd, and we could talk about it on the show next week or not. Who fucking cares?
I want you to explain the haircut to me. Like, is it like part of the joke, or is the haircut like they thought it was cool, but it's, I don't know. It's just, it violates my brain. The Cavill flat top is just, yeah. Dick Tracy-esque. I can't take it.
See, I'll do the investigative journalism to check that out. Yeah. So I'll do that. And then, yeah. And as always, until one of us dies. Oh, no. I can't die until I see footage of Den of Thieves 2. Well, no. First, I can't die until I see your which one comes first? Whichever comes first.
I think Den of Thieves 2 probably comes first, but, you know, okay. I should have a rough cut in a few weeks.
Okay. Yeah. So I can't die until I see Den of Thieves 2 and the next Warpath. So I got to stay alive till then. So until then, to one of us dies, I am on Twitter at ByFictus, talking all the shit. And now it's time to go back to bed. Love you guys.
Yeah. No, you got to get those steps in.
Oh, shit, you're right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Get those steps in. Gotta thrive.
Survive.
Liam, yeah, where can people find you?
Liam Odin, Twitter and mainly Instagram, and headed back home tomorrow, and will definitely be more kid picks and less movie set picks, but I got a lot in the library to dole out over the next year. So anyway, I'm excited. I'll try to try to keep things a little bit closer to the vest from now on. But it was great to catch up with you guys and to talk about this this unique experience. And yeah, it'll be fun to share everything as it unfolds over the next year.
I think I speak for both Vice and I to say that, like, we knew we missed you. I honestly didn't realize how much I missed you until we started recording today. And I was like, oh, damn, I miss this so much. Like, you just sliding. It's like putting on a comfortable shoe. It's just like sliding right back into it. So I'm glad you are back. Obviously, we will make that sacrifice for you to make something like Warpath, but I'm glad you're back.
Yeah, it'd just obviously be great to have a schedule that could just keep recording regularly. But it was like, if I didn't go to bed at 9, because I'm getting up at like 5, you know, it's just
time differences were just brutal. Yeah. But get home safely. I know you got a long trip ahead of you, so make sure you get home safely.
Thank you.
And yeah, a couple other things I want to shout out. You can obviously find me at Hibachi Justice everywhere. You can find the show at A4E Podcast everywhere. Go to linktree.com/A4E Podcast. Join the A4E Discord. We are a awesome community. You can reach out to me on Twitter or email us at a4epod@gmail.com. Or you can reach out to Max Deering, ODST Spartan on every social media app. Max is our Discord master. He is also our producer now and is soon to be our editor. So reach out to Max if you want an invite. I know one thing we'll talk about next week, which is I am 100% watching Air Force One Down, which is the new movie from the Arrow creative team. Basically, James Bamford, who is a director on Arrow, starring Catherine McNamara, who was in Arrow. That's basically a diehard on Air Force One, not to be confused with the Harrison Ford Air Force One, but I'm sure it's going to be the same. So I will be talking about that next week for sure. But other than that, not sure what we'll be talking about, but we'll be back with our usual bullshit. We might also possibly have a guest sometime in the very near future. We mentioned we're going to have Janine. We might also have a certain sniper coming on at some point in the near future. And so we'll keep everybody posted on that. So with that, love you boys. Let's do this again next week.
Peace.
Bye-bye.